Now we're holding on Kuf Aleph Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hamastu Bais L'Chavera, a person rents a house to somebody else. So now you have to consider what kind of things around the house is the landlord responsible for the provision or the maintenance and the upkeep of, and what is the tenant responsible for. So Hamastu Chai Vedelis, the one who's renting it out to the other, is responsible for that there should be a door there, and in other words, to put up a door in the first place, or if it's broken, to fix it. The neger, also for the bolt, Rashi describes the vertical bolt that goes into a hole in the floor. So even now you have doors that sometimes are bolted closed with that kind of thing, and those in that time, apparently that was the standard thing when you wanted to lock the door from the inside and it can't be opened from the outside. The standard way would have a door like that that goes into a hole in the ground. So he's hired to provide that. Over manul and the lock, the regular kind of lock that you can unlock and unlock the door with a key. All those kinds of things are basic things for the house. Over chol davar shemaisa uman, anything else that has to be done by a professional. So nowadays, not necessarily all those things. For example, nowadays it's easy enough for a non-professional to hang a door, so maybe it would be different. But the basic idea is anything that takes a professional to put up, then the landlord is responsible for providing that. That said, brings from Rabbeinu Yohanan that the reason is because these are all basic things. Listen, whether you had a tenant or not, you still need a door, you still need a lock so that people don't come in there. So therefore, it may not depend strictly on whether it's something that has to be done by a professional, but rather whether it's something that's necessary for the basic functioning of the house. The Rambam seems to say similarly, because he says he calls it, he formulates the rule as anything that's ikka godob yeshiva sabatim, as he calls it, anything which is a very basic fundamental thing when it comes to living in a house. Anyway, so those kinds of things the landlord has to provide. On the other hand, avul davar she'ein ma'aseh uman, but something that doesn't take a professional to do, then the tenant is responsible to do that. And the Gemara will give some examples. Again, following Rabbeinu Yohanan and following maybe the Rambam's shita, the idea would be that anything that doesn't need a professional is the kind of thing which is not really so essential for the functioning of the house. It's something more like a luxury, not a luxury maybe, but whatever, something that's not particularly necessary. And therefore it's a frill, and therefore the landlord is not necessarily responsible to provide that. Hazevel Shabalabais. Now, what about then? You have a yard, you have a courtyard that was rented out together with the house. Well, we're going to see in the Gemara what the situation is with this courtyard. Was it rented out or was it not? Anyway, you have the dung, the animal waste that's in that chotzer. Shabalabais, that belongs to the Balabais, that belongs to the landlord. The tenant is only entitled to keep the ashes that come from the oven or from the stove, the range where the ashes can also be used as fertilizer. But the point is, as we're going to work out in the Gemara, why it is that the dung, that the animal waste in the chotzer, why it is that doesn't belong to the tenant, but the ashes that come from the oven and the stove and other kitchen equipment like that, that the tenant uses, then that's his ashes, and therefore he can use those for whatever he wants, including as fertilizer, meaning that the landlord can't say, I was coining them with Kenyan Chotzer. So we're going to see in the Gemara what the situation is with all of this. Okay, so the Gemara starts off, Tanan Abanan, Hamaskir Bayis L'Havera, a person rents a house to somebody else, Maskir Chayiv L'Hamad L'Losis, so then the landlord has to put up the doors, like we said in the Mishnah, Liftoyach Loi Chaloinus, and another thing would be he's obligated to open up windows for him. Now, windows back then weren't glazed; they were just open holes in the wall. But nevertheless, the house needs windows. So the Rambam understands that it means that there were windows in it, but now the windows are damaged or blocked or something. So then the landlord is responsible for making sure that the windows continue to function like before. The The Ritva actually learns, and then the Smeh understands the Rambam to be saying also that even if there are no windows there in the first place, and even the guy rented it knowing that it didn't have windows, nevertheless, you can't really live so easily in a house without windows, and therefore the balabas, therefore the landlord would be obligated to hire workers to have windows, cut into the wall. Anyway, so those are the kind of things that are very necessary for a house, so therefore he's responsible for that. Another example would be l'chazik l'tikra, to strengthen the roof, if Rashi describes if the ceiling beams are getting wormy and getting eaten or rotted away, then the landlord has to replace or fix those. And lismach l'koira, and to hold up the beams. In other words, sometimes you might have that if one of the beams breaks, then you have to put something there to shore it up, to hold it up until you can get it repaired. So all those kinds of things are basic things for the house, and all of those things are the kind that it takes a professional to do. Therefore, the landlord is hired for those. On the other hand, the tenant would be chayav to put up a ladder. If he wants to go up onto the roof, then he would have to supply the ladder, because that's something essential to the functioning of the house, and if not, it doesn't take a professional to do that. Lasis le'maita, also to make for himself a mica, a guardrail around the roof, where, you know, the Torah tells us that if you have a flat roof that people use, then you have to put a guardrail around it. So there is discussion among Rishonim and Achronim. Are we saying that that's Minatura, would the tenant be chayev, or is it maybe Midaraisa, is it Midaraisa, the tenant would be chayev, like the Gemara is saying over here, or maybe it's actually what the Gemara means is Midaraisa, the landlord would be chayev, but Midarabanan, we're going to put it on the tenant himself. Anyway, so that kind of thing. Lasislay Marzev, also to make for him a drain gutter. Rashi describes that the roofs would be slightly sloped towards the edges so that rain runs off them. Then you don't want the rain to run directly onto the wall, so you put up gutters, like Rashi describes them as flat wooden boards that go on all four sides of the roof so that the rain is directed away from the actual walls and it eventually falls on the ground, but this way it's a few inches away from the house, and this way it doesn't damage the walls. That kind of thing. If one of these boards or one of these gutters falls down, it's something easy enough for a non-professional to put back up. Therefore, the tenant is hired for them. And also to re-plaster the roof to keep it from leaking. That kind of thing, again, is something which anybody can easily do, and therefore the tenant would be hired for that. So again, not necessarily are all these things going to be identical now. It'll really depend what in any given time or place is considered essential to the functioning of the house and something that only a professional could do. Take, for example, nowadays, let's say if, for example, the electricity is out, then the landlord would be responsible for it. But maybe, for example, say if there was one particular outlet that wasn't working, maybe not, because that's not so essential to the functioning of the house. But maybe, yeah, because you don't fix outlets yourself. You call in a professional no matter what. So there would be different kinds of things along those lines. Say, for example, there might be certain kinds of plumbing work that are going to be on the landlord and others that are going to be on the tenant and so forth. So the Gemara asks, Bominame Rav Sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes, here's another one, Mezuzah Almi. Who's responsible to put up the Mezuzah? So the Gemara asks, what do you mean, Mezuzah? Ha'omer of Mesharshi, a Mezuzah Chavis Adorhi. Didn't Rav Mesharshi say that the Mezuzah is the obligation on the one who lives in the house? Rashi brings from the Gemara in Menachos, there's a whole section over there in Masechta Menachos that talks about the dinim of Sifrei Torah and Tefillin and Mezuzahs. It's one of the major places in Shas where these dinim are discussed. And it mentions over there when it says, Satam al Mezuzahs Beisecha, your house, that means we darshan from the word Beisecha, that means Beoscha, where you live, where you go in. So therefore, you who live in the house are responsible to put up the Mezuzah. So what are we asking? So of course then the tenant is chayev for that. So Ella Mekoim Mezuzah Mi. Rather the question is, who's responsible to provide the place for the Mezuzah? First of all, Rashi points out, when you get down to it, the word mezuzah doesn't mean just the actual scroll. It means also the doorpost, after all. When we say in Shema, Satama mezuzah spesecha v'sharecha, the original meaning of the word mezuzah is the doorpost. So what we mean is, in other words, the doorpost itself, the landlord has to provide a space in it for the mezuzah. Namely, it would be very common, especially if the doorpost was stone, then you can't easily attach a mezuzah to it with nails or something. So then what you have to do is you have to carve into the stone a space in which the mezuzah is going to go, a recess in which the mezuzah is going to be placed. To this very day, by the way, there are places, you can go to certain places where Jews used to live, and now, for one reason or another, they don't. Various parts of Yerushalayim that are in the hands of the Muslims, for example, parts of Hebron, other places in Europe or whatever, and you can often find over there, you'll find niches carved into the doorways over there, where it's very clear there used to be a mezuzah over there, and this used to be a Jewish house. Anyway, so now the question is, when they're asking Rav Sheshes, the Gemara is saying, they're asking who would be responsible for carving that niche in the door. When it's a stone doorway, and therefore you can't just nail the mezuzah to the doorpost. So Amalahu Rav Sheshes Kinisua. So Rav Sheshes says, well, you have what we learned in the Mishnah, and Dovah She'en Maisa Uman, anything which is not done by a professional, anything which anybody can do. Hasocher is sehu, then the tenant is responsible to do that. Well, the high nami lav maisa uman hu. In this case, it's not something that has to be done by a professional, because it's true, the actual carving of the niche would have to be done by a professional. However, you don't need that niche at all. Instead, efshe hu begufsa d'kanya. Instead, you could use a tube made out of reed and put it up that way. So in other words, what you could do is you could attach, instead of attaching, like this, the normal way would be to attach the mezuzah to the doorpost using nails, and it's true, you can't do that with a stone one, but instead you could put up a tube like that, and then you could attach the tube, then you could attach the tube some other way. Rashi points out then that Tosfos points out that, like this. In Menachos over there, when we talk over there about the mezuzah, the question comes up, what position should you put the mezuzah in? So Rashi learns, and so do many other Rishonim, that the mezuzah should be placed vertically. Well, in that case, Tosfos points out over here, that fits very well with all Gemara over here. Since you're placing the mezuzah vertically, therefore you're going to need to put it in a hollow reed like that in order that it doesn't fall out. Now, on the other hand, Tosfos there in Menachos brings the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that the correct way to put a mezuzah would be lying down. And Tosfos points out over there that to put the mezuzah standing straight up would actually be kind of disrespectful to the mezuzah. Rabbeinu Tam says that in the same way as when you bury somebody, you don't bury him standing up, and that's a very degrading way to bury a person. You bury him laying down, so we see that lying down is more a position of respect. So it should be also when you're putting up the mezuzah that it should be lying down rather than standing up. What we do is nowadays we put the mezuzah on a slant, because that way we're yotze both opinions. It's both standing up and sitting down. For the same reason, the Sifrei Torah and the Aron Kodesh also, we do the same kind of thing. Sfaradim have them standing up straight. They have those heavy cases that the Sifrei Torah come in, and those stand vertically in the Aron Kodesh, and for that matter, they stand vertically when they're leaning as well. We Ashkenazim know, in the Oren, the Sifrei Torah are leaning a bit back, so they're on a slant. And when we lean on the bima, also generally the Sifrei Torah are going to be on a slant, because the bima is usually slanted forward. Anyway, Tosfos points out our Gemara doesn't seem to fit so well with Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. If the mezuzah is lying down anyway, why would you need a case b'chlal? All you have to do then is just put it up over there and you can have a couple of pegs like stuck into the wall or something, into the wood, to hold it up so it doesn't fall, because it's lying down anyway. Tosfos says, fine, though, maybe the fact is that you have to be concerned about the moisture that seeps in through the wall, which is going to ruin the mezuzah, therefore maybe you might need a case for that. There is, by the way, a side thing in this. There's something that the Pesachei Tshuva brings from the Vilna Gaon, that in general you shouldn't use a case because it might be a chatzitza between the mezuzah and the wall, and there's discussion about that. Uh, uh, did, did the villain go and really say such a thing? Well, I said, we see everybody uses cases all the time, and on the face of it, there shouldn't be an issue. So that's brought from a Chaim Kanievsky, where he says that no, it's at most maybe the villain going is talking about when the mezuzah is, when the case is made from a different material than the doorpost, then you could argue that it's a chatzitza, not if it's made from the same material. Well, Maisa, we don't see anybody nizer in that. As far as I know, everybody just uses mezuzah cases made out of whatever. Usually, typically nowadays, they're made out of plastic or metal, and not necessarily is the doorpost made out of that. Anyway. So the point is, Rav Sheshis is saying, not necessarily when you have a stone doorpost, not necessarily does the placing of the mezuzah have to be accomplished by a professional. It's very possible for you to put it up in a case and put it up yourself, and you can manage that without having to carve a niche in the wall. Well, speaking of mezuzah, the Gemara brings Tanan Rabbanan, Hamaskyo Bayis L'Chaveira, a person rents a house to somebody else, Ala Seicha Lasis L'Mezuzah, then the tenant is chayev, as we said, to put up the mezuzah. Uchshu Yotze, and he was, by the way, another din, when he's leaving the house, lo yitlenu v'yodei v'yetze, he should not take it with him and go, rather he should leave it for the next tenant, and the next tenant will pay him for it. On the other hand, if he's renting from a goy, then he should take the mezuzah with him, because even if we know, Rishonim explained, even if this goy regularly rents to other Jews, and therefore it's likely the next tenant is going to be a yid as well, nevertheless, though, you're still concerned that the goy may treat the mezuzah with bizoyan or something. And Rabbeinu Yohanan points out another thing as well. If another yid sees a mezuzah on the door, he's going to think this is a Jewish house. He's going to think to want to stay there or something, and who knows, the goy might be in danger or something from the goy. So therefore, better to take the mezuzah down when you're leaving, so that people don't think this is a Jewish house. And the Braisa continues, it happened once that a person was leaving a house and took the mezuzahs with him, the yotza, and he moved out, the cover, ishto, yishnei bonav, and he ended up, his wife and two children ended up passing away, and he had to bury them because he had taken away the mezuzah. It was kind of midah keneged midah, Mefarshim explained, that he took away the protection of the mezuzah from them, and therefore he lost Hashem's protection for his family. The Chiddush Mam Yuchas and Laritva give this explanation. So the Gemara asks, Maisel Lister, are you bringing a case to contradict what we just said? We just said if you're leaving a house that belongs to a goy, then you should take the mezuzahs. And then we follow up by saying that somebody did take the mezuzah and he was befallen by tragedy. Doesn't that mean that you should leave them even in that case? And the answer is, Amen of Sheshas HaReisha. The story with the wife and children is referring back to the Reisha. So in that case, it was a place that was owned by a Yid, and now the first tenants took the mezuzahs and left, and therefore he was punished with this because he took away the protection from them. Tosfos points out he's going to be putting up the mezuzahs in another place, in his new house. Nevertheless, the fact is, though, he's causing a hezek to the people who are going to be living there now, to the landlord who's going to be taking over the place, or to the new tenants who are going to be living there. He's depriving them of Hashem's protection, and therefore we say he shouldn't do that. Instead, he should leave the mezuzahs, and the owner or the new tenant, as the case, whoever's going to be living there next, is going to pay him for the mezuzahs, and he'll get new ones. We said in the Mishnah, Zevel Shabala Bias, we said that the waste that you find in the courtyard, the animal waste, belongs to the Balabias, the landlord. The tenant is only entitled to keep the ashes that come from the stove or from the oven or from the stove. So the Gemara asks the Maya Skinner, what is the case over here? What's the status of the chotzer and what's the status of the animals that produce the waste? Do we mean that the socher, that the tenant rented not only the house but also the socher, the turdy the socher, and then it's his animals that he brought in there? So then I'm my shabalabais. Why would the waste belong to the landlord? It's rented property. It's now a rental is almost, as Mara mentions elsewhere, it's like a temporary sale. So therefore the schotzer now belongs to the socher. The animals belong to him. Why should the balabas have any right to any of this waste? So are we talking about where the socher did not rent the yard, the Torah de Maskir, and the and the animals over there belong to the Balabas, where Rashi points out, if the Balabas didn't rent out the chotzer, then probably the animals that would be there would actually be the ones that belong to the landlord as well. Because since he didn't rent out the chotzer, then probably he would be keeping his animals over there. Well, then in that case, pshita. Then in that case, obviously the waste doesn't belong to the tenant. Why should it? He has nothing to do with it. Neither as far as the rental of the place, nor as far as the animals that produce the waste. So what is the case over here exactly? So the answer is loy tzricha. The chiddush is the case that the mission needs to tell us is that. The chotzer de maskir, the chotzer does in fact belong still to the landlord. He didn't rent out the chotzer. The tori de osama alma kamuba, but the oxen, the animals that produce the waste, are not his, because then we said then there's no chiddush that the waste belongs to him. The point is that the animals came from elsewhere. Other animals came from other places and came into this chotzer and produced waste over there. So now he's koneh by kinyan chotzer. So Rashi learns that we're talking about davka where he didn't rent out the chotzer. Hagos Hagroa points out that the Rambam says that this din would actually apply even if he did rent out the chotzer. And basically this is a machloikas. Basically the machloikas that you have over here comes down to: do we say when a chotzer is rented by a tenant, then is he koneh things with kinyan chotzer with that? So Rashi learns that yes, if a person rents a property, then he's koneh with things with it with kinyan chotzer, whereas the Rambam says the Rambam says that no, the chotzer was rented out, but nevertheless the owner of the chotzer is still getting things of hefker that fall into it. So in Shulchan Aruch it discusses it. There are Achronim bring a number of questions on the Rambam's Shitta based on all Gemara and based on various Gemaras. And therefore, it's not so simple to say that when he rented out the chotzer, so a practical consideration of all of this would come out. If you rent a property and then you find a metzia in that property, is that going to belong to you because you're the tenant and you're the one living there, or is it going to belong to the landlord because it's his chotzer after all? So that's going to be subject to this machlokas of Rashi and the Ramban. So here the Gemara is saying again that in Shulchan Aruch it just brings the Rambam's opinion that the Rambam brings another point about there are cases where it will belong to the tenant, which we're going to discuss in the Gemara soon. But there are Achronim who question the Beis Yosef already questions that why should he be koneh? Isn't it considered that he sold it temporarily? And then Taz discusses, and other Nosekalim discuss that maybe the Rambam would hold that no, it's not considered a sale. It's considered a sale for certain purposes, but maybe not for other purposes. So that's the case. We're saying that it would belong to the Balabais, where it's basically Hefker that was brought in there. So the Gemara says, "Misayle the Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina." This point supports what Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina says. The Amar Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, "Chatzer Shalom Koneh Loy Shalomi Daitoi." A person's chotzer can acquire him something that falls into it, even when it's not with his das. So in this case, the Balabas doesn't know when the animals are coming in there because they're coming in Me'alma. They're coming in from elsewhere. And nevertheless, we're saying that he's koneh. Now there are conditions about that. We learned earlier, we're going to learn now in the Gemara, that it depends whether it's chotzer mishtameres, whether it's something that is closed and locked and people can't come in there necessarily without his permission, unless in this case, like, he left the door open. And you can have a case Tosfos discusses earlier in the Masechta. You can have, for example, even your house might not be considered mishtameres if you give permission to people to come and go there. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Maisi. The Gemara says, I have a contradiction on Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina. Braisa says, Im Omar, if a person says, Kol Metzias Jevoi L'Soicha Hayoim, any Metzias, any lost objects, for example, wandering animals that come into my chotzer today, tikne li chatzeri, my chotzer should be koine for me, lo yom haklum, what he said doesn't count for anything because he doesn't know when it comes in. If you're going to tell me that we hold by what Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina said, that the chotzer is acquiring for him without his das, so then why shouldn't he? What do we mean? He didn't say anything. The fact is, it should be koina without his das. And the answer is, the case of the Braise is talking about with the chotzer is Eda Mishtameras. It's not guarded in the sense it's not enclosed or it's not closed up or whatever, and people can easily wander in or out. So then it's not koina without his das unless he's standing over there. So for him just to say that I'm koina wouldn't work. But when it's a chotzer and mishameres, then indeed he is koina. Then he is koina without his das. So in this case over here, when we're saying that the chotzer is rented out, but the fact that Tosfos earlier in the Masechta explains that the case could be over here then in the Mishnah. Why is he acquiring the zevil? Is because you have the chotzer is shared jointly with his own house and with the house he rented out. So you have more than one house open into the chotzer, as typically was the arrangement back then. In fact, one of those houses he rented out, the other one he himself is living in. And since it's open to that chotzer, then it's considered as though he's standing in the chotzer, even if the chotzer itself is ein mishtameres and animals are always coming in and out. But because he's standing over there, therefore he's koina by kinyan chotzer. So again, when the Mishnah and the Braisa are saying that he's koina, but the Braisa is saying he's not. So we're saying that because when it's a chotzer mishtameres, he would acquire without even needing to stand there, and where it's a chotzer mishtameres, then not. So the Gemara asks, if you're going to say that it's a chotzer she'en mishtameres, and that's why even when he says that anything that comes in there today, that I'm koina, it won't work, ema sefer, but look at the next part of the braisa. It continues, yotzel she'en metzia be'ir, if there's news going around the city that there's a metzia in his chotzer. So Rashi gives an example that, let's say, for example, a deer with a broken leg got into his field or into his chotzer. Or another example would be, because the reason has to be a broken leg, we learned in the first parak, because otherwise it can run out, and therefore he's not koined at all, because as easily as it ran in, it can run out. But here, where it has a broken leg, it's not getting out so easily. He'd be able to catch it before it runs out. Another example Rashi gives is, let's say, a river overflooded, and it deposited fish on where it had flooded, and some of that is in a person's field or chotzer. So in that case, when there's news going around in the city that there's a metzia in his chotzer, so Dvar of Kayomin, then when he says that, so let's say, for example, he sees, for example, that the river is about to overtop its banks, and his chotzer is right next to the river. So he says, good, anything that lands in my chotzer today, I'm going to acquire. Then the Braisa is saying that does work. Well, if it's a chotzer she'en mishtameres, and anybody can come in there, what's the difference whether there's a rumor in the city that there are metzias in his field? What's the difference? It's not a chotzer mishtameres. It shouldn't be koina for him. We just made the distinction that when do we say chatzer shalom koina lo shalom idaitoi is only where it's a chotzer mishtameres, and this is not. So the answer is, no, the difference is kivin de yotzel shem metzia be'ir. Once the rumor has gone around the city that there are in fact metzias in his chotzer, nivdob dili in shemina, people naturally stay away from it because they don't know. After all, it's a fair thing. It's in his chotzer. They figure he's koine. They're not necessarily familiar with the dinim of chotzer mishtameres versus not. So therefore, they're naturally going to stay away from it. So in effect, at the moment, it becomes a chotzer mishtameres because nobody's going to come in and start taking these things. Now, one idea is, in other words, people stay away from it because they don't want to impinge on his rights, although Rabbi Hanano actually brings an explanation that they're concerned that in those times it was common, we learned about this in Eilat Metzias, it was often the case that when a person found something, the government would want their cut of it, so now people are going to be nervous to go and claim these found objects because they're going to be concerned that then the government is going to put them on the hook for it. So therefore, they're going to tend to stay away from it. But whatever the case, they do. So now there's discussion now in this. The Rambam holds that he'd have to do two things. He'd have to be standing there, and he'd have to say, like Rabbi Yossi, he'd also have to say, because it's a chotz, because it's fundamentally a chotz of she'enim shameres, he would have to be standing there, and he'd have to be saying tikkun li chatzeri. Whereas the Rosh holds that he doesn't need to be standing there, but he does need to say tikkun li chatzeri. In any case, so that's what we're talking about. So again, then therefore, so far, what we're saying is that going back to the case of our Mishnah with the courtyard with the waste in it, since the waste didn't come from the animals of the soicher of the tenant, but rather from other animals that came in there, therefore the maskir would be owning that waste, according to Rashi, only if he hadn't rented out the chotzer, and according to the Rambam, even if he had rented it out. Okay. Well, the Gemara says Maisi, and I have another contradiction on Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina, who again says Chatzeder Shal Adam Kornel Shalemi Daita, and therefore that the landlord is able to be Kornel this waste even without being present. So I have another contradiction. The Gemara says a Brisa says Zevel Ayotzim and Atanum and Akirayim, fertilizer or ashes that is that come from the that come from the oven or from the stove. Vakolat mina aver. Or if a person grabs a hold of the waste from the air, so in other words, Rashi describes, so now the animal is about to defecate, so now the person goes over there and takes a keli and holds it underneath the animal's backside so that he'll catch the waste into that keli rather than letting it fall on the ground. So in those cases, the Braisa says, the shabarefes and the waste that you find in the barn, the shabachotzer, and that you find in the chotzer, shabalabayis, all of that belongs to the balabayis. Now, what do we mean by the barn and the chotzer? We're going to talk about that in the Gemara soon. Do we mean that the barn was or wasn't rented out? We'll get back to that soon. Anyway, so the im isa lahadir of Yosef of Chanina, the omer chatzer shalom karnel shalemi daitoy. Sorry, I misread the Braisa. Let's do that again. Zevel ayotzim min atanum min akirayim v'akolit min ha'avu. When you have the ashes that come from the oven or from the stove, or hakolit min ha'avu, or when the person grabs the dung of the animal from the air before it fell on the ground, harehu shaloi, those belong to him. So the ashes, like we said in the Mishnah, and the dung, now we're going to discuss why it should be his. On the other hand, if it's in the barn or if it's in the chotzer, shabalabayis, then it belongs to the balabayis. If you're going to tell me that we accept what Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says, that the chotzer is acquiring for the balabas, even without his das, even when he doesn't know when the animals are defecating over there, then kolat me'aver amai harei shaloi. Why would we say that if he collects the dung while it's still in the air, he puts a keli over there underneath the animal, and then the waste falls into that? Why should the tenant be able to keep it? Aver chaserehu, isn't it already in the airspace of his chotzer, and should already be considered like it's in his chotzer, and therefore he should be kolat as soon as it starts exiting the animal? Why are we saying that if the other person is kolat it, then he gets to keep it? So the answer is Omar Abai b'mav b'kli b'shulei apara b'shulei para. You could be the Braisa could be talking about where he sticks the keli directly onto the animal's backside. So like this, we would understand that kolat means that he holds a keli a foot or two below the animal, and then therefore the dung falls into that. So now we're Abai is saying no, that's not what it means. It means the keli is directly attached to the animal, and therefore the dung never goes into the air of the chotzer at all. It immediately goes as soon as it exits the animal. It goes directly into the cave. Rava says no, you don't have to say that. Even if you didn't actually put it directly on the animal's backside, still Avashen Sofer Lanuach. When you have air, which is when you have it's in the air, but it's not going to end up landing on the ground. Lav Kamunach Dami, it's not considered as though it's already on the ground. Meaning, in other words, if you have the end, there's nothing between the animal's backside and the ground, and the dung is going to fall directly on the ground. Sure, we could say even while it's in the air, then the balabas is already koneh because it's going to land in his chotzer. But like this, when you put a keli over there to block it, then of necessity, it's not going to fall on the ground. Therefore, we won't say it's considered the balabosas until it actually lands on the ground. And therefore, therefore the braisa is saying you, the tenant, have a window of opportunity over there to get that done before it lands on the chotzer by putting a cable. Well, the Gemara asks for me, pshita le the Rava, is it in fact that Rava knows for a fact that, does Rava know for a fact this concept that when something is in the air and is not going to land on the ground over there, that it's not considered that it landed? We in fact find that Rava had a question on this. The boy Rava, namely, we find that Rava asked the question, which we had earlier in our Masechta, Zorak Arniki Pesach Zeh, V'yotzosar Pesach Zeh, if a person threw a purse through a house and it went in through one door, now what it actually explains that he threw the purse and he was master to whoever gets it first. So now if he threw it through the door of somebody's house, the yotzasa of Pesach Zeh, and it went out the other side, mahu, what would be the din? Would the owner of the house be acquiring that the house or the chotzer or whatever? Would the owner be acquiring that purse by going through his airspace or not? The question is, Abashain Circle on Nuach, when you have it's flying through the air over there, it's not going to land because the way he threw it, it's not expected to land inside the house or the chotzer. Kamunach Dami, I love Kamunach Dami. Is it considered like it's lying there on the ground, or is it not? So we see Rava wasn't certain about that din. How can he be so certain of it now that when there's a cavity in the way, then automatically the balabas is not acquiring the dung? And the answer is hosam lemifsek lemidi. The difference is there's nothing there separating the purse from the ground. Fine, it's not going to land on the ground because of the force with which you threw it. But nevertheless, there's nothing actually, suppose that something unexpected were to happen. Maybe let's say a gust of wind or something were to knock it down onto the ground inside the chotzer, then it would land on the chotzer and there's nothing blocking. Whereas over here, you have a keli that's separating them, and no matter what, it's not going to fall on the chotzer in under any circumstances, and therefore here, Rava can be certain that it's not considered soif on the nuach. So in other words, Rava would say it depends whether there's something that's going to prevent it from landing on the ground, or whether it's just something that's not expected to land on the ground. Okay. So that would explain why the Braisa is saying when he catches the waste cut in the air before it lands on the ground, that would be why he's able to keep it, because even if we say Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina says that the chotzer would be acquiring it for him, but it's not, we don't have kinyan chotzer in this case. Okay. Let's analyze the rest of the Braisa. The Braisa had said v'shabar refes v'shabar chotzer, the waste that you find in the barn or in the chotzer, harei al shabala bayis, then it belongs to the balabayas. So the Gemara asks, Tauti, are you saying two things? Meaning, in other words, it sounds repetitious. Rashi explains the Gemara's question is it sounds repetitious. You just say one, you say the barn or you say the chotzer. We're anyway talking about, Rashi had explained before, we're talking about you didn't rent out the chotzer, you didn't rent out the barn. So why bother mentioning both of them? That's according to Rashi. Tosfos learns that actually it's more that the Braisa seems to be contradicting itself. There's no question, obviously, if you rent a chotzer, you're not automatically renting the barn that's in the chotzer unless it was included in the rental. So therefore, when the Braisa is saying that what's in the barn doesn't belong to the tenant, it belongs to the balabas, obviously it's not so much to tell us it's more to tell us the implication of it, that what's in the chotzer would belong to the tenant, because the tenant has rights on the chotzer, even if he didn't rent the chotzer, he still has rights to go in and out of it. Now, though, we're saying that it belongs to the balabais. So what is it? So according to Tosfos, the question is that the braisa seems to be contradicting itself. First, it's saying what's in the barn belongs to the balabais, implying that what's in the chotzer belongs to the tenant because he has an easement there in the chotzer. If nothing else, he has an easement there to go in and out. Then we're saying, on the other hand, belongs to the balabais. So what is it? Amar Abaye Hochi Karma. So Abaye says what the braisa means is the sheba refes, it means when you have the animal waste that you find in the barn that is in the chotzer, so you have rented out the chotzer, but the barn is not automatically included. Hare Elo Shabbal Abayis, then the waste that you find in the barn belongs to the Bala Bayis. Amar Ravashi, Zoyse Meres. So Ravashi says, you can deduce from this, Hamastu Chatzer Estam, when a person rents out his Chatzer without specifying Lahiskir Refes Shabbat, it doesn't automatically mean that he rented out a barn that's in it, unless specified. So they say, for over here, even if he did rent out the Chatzer, so it's not just a matter of that the Soicha, it's not just a matter of that the Soicha, the tenant, has an easement through that Chatzer to go in and out. He actually has a temporary ownership of that chotzer as far as that, and maybe even again according to Rashi, at least we would say that he does have kinyan chotzer on it now, but nevertheless he's not automatically renting the barn with it, and therefore anything in the barn still belongs to the Bala Bayis. Okay, so getting that back to Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina, the Gemara says, Mesi, I have another contradiction on Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina's din that a person's chotzer can be kind of acquired for him, shaloi midaita. We know we have a din, we have a mitzvah of shaloh hakan. When you find a nest, then you have to send away the mother bird before you take the eggs or the chicks. Now, the rule is, as the Gemara is going to quote now, ki yikore, the pasuk says, when it's found, when you happen to come on it, implying, in other words, as opposed to when you have a nest that you own, then you potter from shaloh hakan with it. That's how, for example, I mean, how else would you be able to raise chickens for their eggs, for example, every time you take them to the eggs, you'd be over on the mitzvah of shaloh hakan? No, because that's different, because it's prop on the zuman, because you have a chicken coop over there where you're regularly raising chickens, and therefore you're potter. Now, a braisa says, yoneh shovach v'yoneh aliyah, when you have doves that nest in your birdhouse, so you put up birdhouses over there, the birds over there are feral, they come and go as they please, but you put up the birdhouses for them to have a nice convenient place to stop in and build nests or whatever. But you don't fundamentally own you don't actually own the birds themselves so much. The birds themselves are wild or semi-wild, and they go and forage for their own food. They just use this as their home base. Meaning Rashi says, as opposed to you have what are called in the Gemara in Cholim Yonehaudesios, which are fully domesticated doves, where they actually live with you in your house or in a place that you set up for them. Here, these birds basically forage out in the fields on their own, and just they come every evening to the Shoivach and they sleep there overnight. When you have birds over there, the Yone Aliyah, or doves that nest in a person's attic, you have to do shiloh hakan with those, because they're not considered your animals. They're not considered your birds. Basuris begezum, okay, Dauke Shalom, other people are not allowed to take them because of Dauke Shalom, meaning it's not technically yours. You don't really have full rights, full ownership over them. Nevertheless, because of Dauke Shalom, somebody else should not take those birds. Midrabon. So now, if we follow Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina's opinion, and we say that the chotzer is kona for him even without his das, why shouldn't he be kona? Korikan, shouldn't we apply the pasuk over here, ki yikore, that the pasuk is when you encounter a nest, implying kraplamazuman, as opposed to when it's already ready for you, when it's already prepared for you in the house. Now, granted, Rashi points out that the birds themselves, the mother birds, are not necessarily going to be. You don't have control over them. It's not a chotzer and a shameres regarding them, because they come and go as they please. But after all, the eggs are mishameres as far as the eggs. The eggs aren't going anywhere without you taking them. So once you're zoicher in the eggs, then you don't have the mitzvah of shiloh hakan. So why is the braisa saying that you do in fact have that? You do in fact have that mitzvah. The answer is Amar Rava Beitza Beitzias Ruba Hudi Chayva Lo B'Shiloach. The difference is like this: as soon as the egg is mostly out of the mother, then you're already chayv in shiloh hakan. At that point, if you wanted to take the egg, you would have to first send away the mother bird, and only then could you take the egg. Umitna lekanya adenofel lachatzeroi, but it's not kone. He's not fully kone. He's not kone of his kinyan chotzer until it actually lands in his chotzer. V'chi katoni chayovis b'shiloach. So when the braisa says that he has to do shiloh hakan, mikamid tipol hatzera, that means before it actually fell into his chotzer. So therefore, even Rabbi Yosef of Chanina wouldn't say that his chotzer was kona yet, because it didn't yet fall into the chotzer. So we did say before about having a keli there where it falling directly into the chotzer, but Pashtus here also the point is that it's going to fall into the nest or something, which is not really his keli, and therefore we wouldn't call it that it's falling into the aver of his chotzer. So the Gemara asks, "Hochi amaya asuras mishum gezel?" Well, in that case, if he hasn't even been kona yet, then why are the chachamim even applying the din of gezel? Why are they saying that you can't take them if they dark b'sholim? It didn't even fall in his chotzer yet. Why shouldn't somebody else be able to take the eggs? The answer is the Gemara says, "Aimon." When we say asuras mishum gezel, we're referring to the mother. Also the mother. In other words, at least the owner of the birdhouse or the attic or whatever has in mind, he figures the mother is going to return there in the evening. So now somebody else finds the eggs. Fine, the eggs might not be osir mipnei gezel because he wasn't koneh them with kinyan or the eggs. No, once they come into the shrevach over there, then they are asuras mishum gezel. But as far as the mother as well. The point is, the owner of the shrevach knows that the mother is going to be returning over there, and therefore he has that in mind, and therefore, so it's true, on a Daraisa level, he's not acquiring them by kinyan chotzer, but nevertheless, he's acquiring it. So Rashi says we mean both the mother and the eggs, afilu ha'iman, Tosfos learns it means exclusively the mother, that the asuras mishum gezel would refer only to the mother, and Tosfos points out, let's say, for example, if there are no eggs, then there's no issue of Shiloh HaKan, so therefore you could take the mother, but it would be also Mepay Dak Shalom. So that's one answer. Viboyis Ema, another answer, you could say, La'olam HaBeitzim, in fact, the words Mepay Dak Shalom can be referring to the eggs. Mid the Nafik Ruba, once most of the egg has exited the mother, Daita Ilava, then he already has in mind to keep it for himself, and therefore, so yes, Midaraisa, he wasn't Konet yet because he didn't fall into his chotzer, but nevertheless, Midarabanon, we would say Mipnei Dakishon. However, the Gemara says, now eventually we find a different answer that forestalls those previous answers. Bahashta, the Omer of Yehuda Amar Rab, now that we find that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rab, also Lizkus Vebetzin, calls Mansha Imre Vetzis Aleihem, a person is not allowed to acquire the eggs, meaning not even that he's picking them up, but because he says, I'm going to acquire them, calls Mansha Imre Vetzis Aleihem, as long as the mother is crouching and incubating on the eggs, Shanema, because Vosges Shalayach Tashalach Hasa'im, first send away the mother, the hoder, and only then, as a bonim tikach loch, then you can take the babies, the eggs or the chicks for yourself. And that means Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you can't even be zoche in them, you can't even make any kind of kinyan on them before you send away the mother. The Rambam holds up the Rabban and the Raivan holds the Daraisa. So once we say that, then we don't need the answer before that the egg has only partially come out of the mother. You could be talking about even that the egg fell into the chotzer entirely, but he's not zoche because kol heich of the iu motzi zochile, anywhere where he himself would be able to be zoche in it, chatzele zachile, then we can say his chotzer can accomplish that on his behalf. But since in this case he can't be zoche in it yet, because he's blocked from being zoche in it till he does shiloh hakan, like Rabbi Yehuda said, then the chotzer is not zoche for him either, and therefore you can't say that he was koneh with kinyan chotzer. Therefore, the most we can say is medate shalom, somebody else shouldn't take them. Well, the Gemara asks, Ihochi, Asuras Begezum, Dedaka Shalom. Well, then we have to figure out, what do we mean that they're also to steal, that there are somebody else is also to take them, Dedaka Shalom? Idashalfa, if the Gazlan himself does the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, well then, and now he takes the eggs, Gezel Malyahu, then it's full-fledged Gezel, because once he did Shiloh HaKan, now, according to Rabbi Yosef of Hanina, the Balabas is immediately Zoche in the eggs, because even though it's Shalomi Daita, it's in his chotzer, and therefore he's koneh. And therefore, when the other guy, having done Shiloh HaKan, wants to take the eggs, it won't just mean Pnei Dapke Shalom, it'll be full-fledged Gezel. The Idalei Shulcha, and if the Gazlan did not yet do Shiloh HaKan, Haboi Shalucha, then we're saying, until he sends it away, then you have the Isser, that he hasn't sent it away yet. So never mind Gezel, he can't be acquiring them at all. What exactly do we mean? That he is allowed, he is able to be Zoycha in them, but nevertheless, Mepnei Dakas Shalom, he shouldn't. So the answer is b'katan, because we're talking about a katan coming to take the eggs. The law bav shiluachu. Now he's not chayiv in the mitzvah of shiluach hakan because he's only a katan. So therefore, that's what we're saying. That therefore, he's not over on the issur min haTorah. So he's not over on the issur of being zoicha in them without shiluach hakan. So the Gemara asks, katan bar darche shalom hu. So if a katan is not chayiv in mitzvahs min haTorah, he's also not chayiv in the concept of darche shalom. The Chum can't impose on him a din like that to be also to keep something if they darche shalom. He's not chayiv in mitzvahs in general. So the answer is Hokkama, right. What the Braita means is Ovid Shokotan Chayv Lahatsu Loi means the father of this child would have to return the eggs to the owner of the Chotzer and pay Darke Shalom. On the one hand, he could say, look, my son took the eggs and he wasn't over on what Rabbi Huda said of taking them before Shiloh HaKan because it's a cotton. You weren't Zoycha in them yet either, you Balabas, because Shiloh HaKan hadn't been accomplished yet. Nevertheless, pay Darke Shalom, you are the eggs back and you can take it from you. Tosfos brings a different girsa. So Rashi refers to a girsa over here, and Tosfos also refers there, and both of them reject this girsa, the sholcha cotton, whether we're talking about that the cotton actually did shiloh hakan. So no, we're not talking about that the cotton did shiloh hakan. Tosfos points out, if he did, then the fact is, at that point, the owner of the birdhouse or whatever would be koina, because, okay, the cotton did shiloh hakan, fine, he's not obligated in the mitzvah, but nevertheless, it's still been done. So no, what we mean is, in other words, that the cotton took the eggs without doing shiloh hakan, and again, the owner of the birdhouse or the attic or whatever has not been koina. Tosfos actually points out that the wonder is that the Gemara could have said, the Gemara didn't even need to be that it was a cotton. You could have, for example, that he put his hand underneath the eggs, and therefore, he does to prevent the owner of the chotzer from acquiring them, and now after he does Shiloh HaKan, now he's going to be zoichaing them. The Gemara could have given such a scenario as well. Okay. The bottom line is the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, Chatzer Shalom is Koinah Loshalani Daitai. That is why in our Mishnah, even when the animals come from the outside world and produce waste in the chotzer, then the owner of the chotzer owns that waste. Again, according to Rashi, only if he hadn't rented it out, and according to the Rambam, and this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskens, even if he did rent it out. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamasta buys the chaver, a person rents a house to somebody else, Lashona, we rent it out for a year. So now, is it sometimes a year is 12 months, sometimes it's 13. Nisabra Hashana, if the year ends up being a leap year, Nisabra La Socher, then the extra month belongs to the Socher, meaning he doesn't have to pay extra rent for the fact that he's getting it for an extra month. He just has to pay 12 months rent rather than 13. So the Rif points out actually that this would apply whether we knew in advance that it was going to be a leap year or not. Either way, he's entitled to get that 13th month for free. On the other hand, Hiskula l'chadoshim. On the other hand, if the deal was that he's renting it by the month, so X amount per month, Nisabra Shon and Nisabra l'masku. Now, if it's a leap year, then it's the landlord who gets the rent, who is entitled to the rent for the extra month. Because the deal was it's going to be by the month, and now it turns out there are 13 months rather than 12. So there's something that Rashba says on it that if he just told him I'm renting it to you for a year versus, for example, if he said for this year or something, there's distinctions between that, whether we would say you could have also, for example, he said I'm renting it to you, let's say, until next Shodesh Nisan, where obviously then it's gonna depend, then it means he's staying for a fixed amount, and therefore obviously there's no extra rental for that. But we're saying if he said month by month, then when there's a 13th month, then he is in fact going to have to pay him for the extra month. And the Mishnah continues, Maisa b'tzipori, it happened in the city of Tzipori, a person rented a bathhouse from somebody else, the shneim also zohav l'shana, for 12 gold coins for a year, midina zohav l'chodesh, one gold dinner per month. So in other words, they had said both. They had said that it's 12 per year, and they had said it's one per month. Now it was an Ibur Yor, so what happens? So the case came to Rav Shimon Gamliel and to Rav Yosi, v'omru, and they said, yachloipu as chodesh Ibur, they have to divide, the tenant has to pay half the rent for the Ibur. So the Gemara asks, Maisel Lister, is this case that the Mishnah is bringing contradicting what we just said before? We just said in the Mishnah that's one or the other. Either the tenant has to pay the extra month or he doesn't have to, but no case where you divide it. And here the Mishnah is then telling us a case where they were told to divide it, where he pays only half the rent. The Ritva points out, it's not really literally a contradiction, but it's rather, in other words, the Mishnah had not described such a case, so why are we bringing in this case? Another point he says also is, since the Mishnah is saying either the tenant gets the month for free, or he has to pay for it, implying there's no case where he only pays half the rent, and here we're bringing a story where he was told to pay half the rent. Anyway, the answer is Suri Masura. The Mishnah is missing a phrase, V'hochit Katani. What it means is like this. If they mentioned, so the Mishnah first mentioned where they said the amount of the rent per year. Then it said where it said the amount of rent per month. Now what if they said both for the month and for the year? For the year and for the month, yachloiku, then the Mishnah is implying that then they divide it, that then he has to pay half. And in fact, it happened in the city of Tzipori. A person rented a bathhouse from somebody else at the rate of 12 gold coins per year. One gold dinner per month. And now the question is, do we go according to the first thing that he said, a year, and therefore it includes the 13th month, or do we go according to the second thing that he said, where he said the month? And then, therefore, he owes for the 13th month, and they say they divide it. And the point is, in other words, because then we would say, we don't know whether we go according to Loshen Rishon or Loshen Achron. We don't know whether we should follow the first statement that he said per year, or the second statement that he said per month, and therefore, Yachloiku, similar to what we had earlier in the Perek, where we had, where you have cases of Mammon on multiple Suffolk, where you have a Suffolk about the ownership of some money, and we said, Sumchos in particular says Yachloiku, so therefore, so our Mishnah would be based sort of Shimon Gamliel, and Rabbi Yossi would be basing themselves on the same point. So the Gemara asks, so the Gemara says, Omar Rav, I have very awesome. So Rav says, you know, if I had been there, if I had been one of the Dayonim judging this case, have a Yahivna like Kula Lamaskir, I would have said that the landlord is entitled to the full 13th month's rent. I would have said we ignore the fact that he said anything about the year, and we would focus on the fact that he says that he said by the month, and therefore he would owe him a 13th gold dinner for the 13th month. Well, the Gemara asks, my Kamash Malon, what is Rav's Chiddush in saying that statement? Does he mean Tfois Loshen Achron? Does he mean that he wants us to know that when you have two contradictory statements said back to back, then you ignore the first one and you go according to the second one, and you have a Machlokas about that among Tanoim? So Rav would be saying that he holds like the opinion that Tfois Loshen Achron. The question is, we don't need Rav to say that. We already find a different context where Rav said such a thing. The Amar of Hona, Amri Beirav, they said in the yeshiva of Rav. Beirav doesn't necessarily have to mean the yeshiva of Rav. It can mean the yeshiva in general, but here Rav Hona is quoting it actually from the yeshiva of Rav, and that would mean that this is something that Rav himself endorsed. Now you could have where people are making a deal between them as far as that I'm going to pay you X amount for something. When one person is saying, how much do you want to sell this for? And the other one says, istira me'amoi. So you have like this. Now an istira is a coin that usually consists of 96 prutas. So it actually explains that an istira is otherwise known as a sela medina. We learned about it in Bava Kamma. We've learned about it here and there in Shas. You had two different currency systems in those times that both had the same name. You have the same way as nowadays, let's say you have a dollar in different places in the world, but you have an American dollar that's worth X amount, and you have a Canadian dollar which is worth a different amount, an Australian dollar which is worth a different amount, etc. The same way, in those times, you had what was called Kesef Tsuri, silver coins that were made in the city of Tsur, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, which those were pure, or almost pure silver. And then you had what was called Kesef Medina. Well, we learned about this earlier in Amasechta as well, where you have coinage that was made, it had the same denomination, but only 1/8 of it was silver, and the rest of it was copper. This came up in Shlosh HaKrokim of Rambam a couple of days back as well in connection with the Tzuba. Anyway, the point is, so therefore a dinner in the Kesef Medina system would be worth 1/8 of a dinner in the Kesef Tzuri system. So now you have a coin called an istira, which is otherwise known as, which is otherwise equal, it's the equivalent of a sela medina, and therefore it's worth 1/8, therefore it's worth 1/8 of a sela tzuri, namely it's worth half of a dinar in the tzuri system. And that includes, that contains 96 frutas. And Rashi makes the calculation how we get 96. So now the person says, so one person says, how much are you selling this for? The other one says, istira mea moi. An istira, 100 prutas. Rashi points out, moi usually means mois, but there's no coin that consists of 100 mois, so we have to understand over here that mois means prutas. So he's saying istira, which implies 96, but then he says, mea moi, 100 prutas. So what is it? Is it 96 or 100? So then the din is mea moi, then we say it means he wants to sell it for 100 prutas, because tois losh and achron. Mea moi istira, and if it's the other way around, if he says 100 prutas and istira, then istira, then the other guy has to pay him an istira. In other words, Rav is saying you always go according to losh and achron. Rashi says we're talking about where they're making a verbal deal. The Rambam, when he mentions this din, mentions when it's written in the shtar. But then the Chidushim Am Yuchasim LaRitva points out that not. You say Yad Ba'al Ashtar Al Tachtoina. Whenever you have a shtar and you have an uncertainty what it means, you always go according to the lesser amount, because I'm Motzim Achavel of Araya. So therefore, it would have to be over here, as it would have to be a verbal thing, like Rashi says. And the case would be, for example, it was a Shchiv Mera, and then he passed away, and we don't know what he meant. Anyway, so Rav is saying that you go according to the last Lashon. So why does he need to mention that in our case of on Mishnah as well? And the answer is Ime Hosam, if we only had that case of Istira Mea Moi and Rav's din on it, Havam in a Porushi Kamafarish. You would think that, you know why, you go according to what he said last, is because we understand that the second part of the statement is meant to clarify the first one. So when he says Istira Mea Moi, what he means is, I don't want a regular Istira, which is worth only 96 frutas. I want a larger Istira, which is worth a little more, which is worth 100. And when he says the other way around, Mea Moi Istira, he means I'm willing to accept 100 lesser quality prutas, which equal 96 regular prutas, which is the value of a regular istira. So you can say that he's explaining what he said, so it's not a matter of tzfois loshon achron, it's a matter of that you would say that the second statement doesn't contradict the first one, it clarifies it. Tosfos has a different explanation that we're not referring to Rav's statement about the istira and the mea moi. Rather, we're going back to what Rav had said about the case of the bathhouse, where if he had been there, he would have given it all to the maskir. You would say, in other words, when he says 12 dinarim per year, he might mean, even if you pay me month by month, I'm not going to wait. Now, normally, even if I'm not willing to wait until the end of the year for the rent. I want the rent month by month, and so it could still mean, in other words, I'm willing to accept 12 dinarim for the year, even if it's a leap year, provided that you pay me the rent at the end of every month rather than waiting until the end of the year. So you could learn like that, so that would be what we mean by Purushi Kamifarish, that he's saying, in other words, not that it's 12 dinner per year and one dinner per month, where then we have the question of the 13th month, but rather it means 12 dinner per year, provided that you pay me one dinner per month. That would be one way that Tosfos brings how you could understand what the Gemara is saying over here. Tosfos also brings from, so that's from the Ri, and then Tosfos also brings from the Rashbam, That it means, in other words, he would say, to begin with, if it's a Shana Pshuta, then I don't know whether it's going to be a leap year yet. If it's a Shana Pshuta, then I'm willing to accept 12 dinner. But if it turns out to be a Shana Moberes, then I want one gold dinner per month. So therefore, it's not a matter of Tois Loshon Achron. He's clearly indicating that if there's a leap year, he wants payment for that 13th month. So that would be, if we only had that din, we would say that Rav holds, it's not a matter of Tois Loshon Achron, it's a matter of that he's clearly stating, according to the Rashbam's explanation, that he wants that 13th month. You wouldn't know what he says about Mea Moi Yistira. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav has to tell us that no matter what, we always do say it's a matter of Tfois Loshon Achron. It's not a matter of clarifying or anything. Even when the two statements contradict each other, we go according to the second one. Okay, that's all according to Rav. Then the Gemara continues, Ushmuel Amar, and Shmuel says the case of our Mishnah, where we say that each of them is entitled to half the rent, is talking about where it comes in the middle of the month. He comes halfway through the Ibuyar and says that, you know what, either you pay me for the entire month or I'm throwing you out. So now, so the part that he was there for so far, he has a chazakah, and the part that he hasn't been there yet for, then he does, he's not muchzakin. So whichever one is muchzakin, whichever part is the part. Aval bob tchilas chodesh. But Shmuel says if he were to come at the beginning of the month, kulei lamaskir, then the landlord would be entitled to the full rent for the month, or the other guy has to leave. Bob is soif chodesh, and if it comes at the end of the month, kulei lasoicher, then the rent for that month would belong entirely to the soicher. So we would go according to whichever one is muchzak in the money right now. Because in other words, Hamotzim, in short, each one would be Mochzik respectively, and therefore Hamotzim Achavel Averaya. So in fact, the Ritva says, in that case, till now we've been understanding the reason why Yachloiku is with Momen Amutu B'Safik. Now Shmuel is saying, it's not Momen Amutu B'Safik, it's just because Hamotzim Achavel Averaya. So the Gemara says, Mi Amar Shmuel Layamin and Tfois Lashon Akron. So you're telling me that Shmuel says we don't go according to the Lashon Akron, that therefore we don't say because he said a year for 12 dinner and a dinner per month, we don't just go according to the Lashon Akron. We have to consider the first statement as well. And therefore we're going to say that whenever he comes to demand the rent, we go according to that. Well, Rav and Shmuel Da'ami Tavayu, don't Rav and Shmuel both say, suppose that a person is selling, for example, grain to somebody else. He says, I'm selling you this kur, which has kur contains 30 sa, for 30 zuzim. Then he's allowed to retract from the deal, even when they're measuring out the last sa. The guy had done meshicha so far on 29 of them, but it's all one big sale, and until he does meshicha on the 30th sa, he hasn't acquired the whole thing, so therefore he'd be allowed to back out. Okay, we said maybe there would be mishapara involved if he paid him already, there would be mechusar amana if he hadn't paid yet, but nevertheless he still has the ability to, if let's say he knows that now he's going to get a better price someplace else. On the other hand, kur b'shloshim selani mochamach. On the other hand, if he tells you I'm selling your kur for 30 sela, implying that, if he says kur b'shloshim saw the sela, but if he says I'm selling you a kur for 30 at the rate of one saw per sela, ani mochalach, rishin kona, then each one, as the buyer does the meshicha on the one saw, then he's kona that, because since he said, he did say kur b'shloshim, implying that's one lump thing of a kur, but he also said saw the sela, implying that it's a saw at a time, each one is a separate transaction of a saw, and therefore, so we say rishin kona. So therefore, he is kona at a saw at a time, meaning that we do go according to Lashon Akron. So we see that Shmuel holds you go according to Lashon Akron. Why in our Mishnah did he not say that? And the answer is Hossam time and my Mishnah the toughest. Well, you have to consider, why is Shmuel saying that you go according that he's Kona one saw at a time? Because he is holding on to it. He already is Mochzik. He did a Kinyan on that saw, on the first saw, the second saw, and so forth. Hochanami Katopis. Well, over here also, he's holding on to the rental. He's holding on to the actual property itself and to the money for the rental. So therefore, so Shmuel is being consistent. Whoever's the Mochzik is the one who's entitled to be. Now, the Gemara brings a third opinion. The land is in the chazakah of its owner. So therefore, in this case over here, so not like Shmuel says, it depends when during the month he demanded the rent. Anytime he's going to have to pay him the full rent. Which would mean, in other words, not even like the Mishnah says, Yachloiku. Now, Rav Nachman obviously can't argue with a Mishnah, but he can say that our Mishnah is only because it's only according to Sum. In fact, Tosfos says elsewhere that Rav Nachman might understand that even the Chachamim sometime agree that because there's a suffix in the din, then therefore Yachloiku, but then naturally Rav Akiva Eger asks, well, in that case, then how would that fit with our Gemara? How could Rav Nachman then argue with the Mishnah in that case? So a way of understanding that then is like Tosfos says over there, that is like the Ramban rather says, that Rav Nachman would say our Mishnah is strictly according to Sumpus, and Halacha is not like it. Well, again, the question is, my Kamash Malan, Tfos Lashon Akron, is Rav Nachman telling us that you go according to Lashon Akron, Hainu the Rav? Well, he's saying exactly the same thing as Rav. What's his Chiddush? The answer is, Afagav, the Apich Meipach, the Chiddush is even if he flipped it around. In the Mishnah, we said, where he said, 12 dinner for the year, one dinner per month. And if we say Lashon Akron, then it means that he's entitled to the extra dinner for the 13th month. Now, Rav Nachman is saying, what about if he said the other way around? One dinner per month, 12 dinar per year. If we went according to Loshon Achron, like Rav, he would be entitled to only 12. He wouldn't be entitled to an extra dinar for the 13th month, because he said Loshon Achron would be 12 dinar per year. Rav Nachman is saying that no, because the land is in the chazaka of the owner, we're always going to say that he's entitled to the 13th month because he's considered the muchzik in it, not like Shmuel, who says it depends when during the month he asks for the rent, and not like Rav, who said that you go according to Loshon Achron, but rather Rav Nachman is saying you're always going to go in favor of the landlord because he has the chazaka.